Welcome, everybody, to the Menlo Midweek Podcast. My name is Mark, and thanks so much for joining us today as we have Phil on. And it is Jess Haven's last time with us on the Menlo Midweek Podcast. So please send her some love and encouragement to 650-600-0402 so I can pass that along to her. We love having that number open as well, as you have been so great in adding to this conversation, and we'd love to encourage you to do so, as well as encourage you to check out some of the events that we have coming up around our Wonderfully Made series. So let's go ahead and jump into our conversation.
One last clap.
Yes, that was good.
Beautiful. Welcome, everybody, to the Menlo Midweek Podcast. My name is Mark.
My name is Jessica.
And Phil's with us today.
Yay.
That's right.
Hi,
hey,
Phil.
Everybody. Good to see you.
It is good to see everybody, but I'm also just putting on so much fake fire, is how I like to say it, because my fire on the inside, half of my fire is going out because my other half of my work self is, it's her last day today, but I'm so incredibly happy for you.
Thank you.
How has the last week been? As a seven, are you diving into all of the fun things? Are you trying to feel the feels? What's been going on?
Yeah, I definitely had some feels last weekend. Just, I'm also moving back down to Sunnyvale. And so it was a little bit of a stressful, like, I hadn't signed a lease yet. The job was ending. The new job was starting. I didn't want to move. I didn't want to do it, like, all the things. And I just, like, let it all go. And it felt really great. As hard as it was, it did feel good.
Yeah.
But this week has been just really sweet. Just, like, got a lot done to feel like I can, you know, set the team up well and move forward. And our team got to go out to breakfast this morning, which was really nice, and had a couple people take me out to lunch this week. I'm having some friends over tonight. So it's just been a sweet time. You know, I'm so sad, but I'm also so excited. So it's this weird balance of feelings. And Phil and I were just saying earlier, I'm like a later crier. So like it'll hit me in a couple days or a couple weeks. I'll just be like, I miss everything and everyone I've ever known. Definitely the, you know, hardest part of leaving is the people and specifically this podcast. It's been a bright light in my week for a long time now.
It really has been.
Like 2 years, I think, in March.
Yeah, pretty much since it started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dang.
It's pretty crazy.
That's wild.
Yeah. Man. Phil, what are your thoughts and feelings around this whole thing? I know I'm so close to it. It's just like it feels devastating. And so I think other staff is feeling that as well, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I've said this to Jess personally, but, when I got here, we reorged the central team. So that's the one that we all serve on. And and so Jess, like, stepped into a little bit different of a role and all of a sudden was working with me a lot. And I just said to her, like, man, I've watched you grow a whole bunch and don't want you to go anywhere, really thankful for you. But also, like I say to our team sometimes, everybody at Menlo is a volunteer. Some of us just happen to get a paycheck. Nobody's handcuffed to their desk. Jess is not Menlo's. Jess is not mine. Jess is Jesus. And so Jess is Jesus's.
I was going to say, I heard Jess is Jesus.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And then I say to our team sometimes too, people don't reveal their character by how they show up. They don't reveal their character by how they stay. We really reveal our character by how we leave. And Jess is just leaving so incredibly well, setting the team up so incredibly well. Really, like, so much class, so much honor of your time here and the team that's going to be here still. So, yeah, I'm going to miss you a lot. Really appreciate you. Really appreciate the work that you've done. Mm-hmm. And more than that, like, appreciate how you have brought so much of yourself to what you do here. And you've made Menlo a better place. And we'll try to honor a piece of that. We're all interim. Like, we all serve for a season. And your season is a significant one that I think is going to make a difference for a long time. So, thank you.
Yes, Jess.
You don't have to say anything if you can't get through it.
Nope. We're going to go into our message now. So, Phil, you were...
Wait, I did bring a little... I wanted to get, like, a full-on gift, but I thought this was funnier.
Whoa.
I have a little picture of me and Wesley, my dog.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
So we'll just put it... You can put it on the chair, maybe,
I'm just going to put it on this mic.
Can I do it right now? I brought tape.
Do it. Do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So great. Wesley and I will always be here.
Perfect. Oh, that's so good.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay, now moving on. Go.
Now moving on. Phil, your message. You did the thing this past weekend that you didn't have to do last weekend.
Yep.
So you were back at it this weekend.
Back at it. Yep. And, I think there are people that I think expected this series. Like we said, hey, this is going to be a five-week conversation. But I think there are still people that were like, yeah, but what's the one, you know? And that's really not the way that this series is designed. It's designed to kind of walk over the course of all of it. So this week was about this combination that Jesus so beautifully created of unconditional love and uncompromising faith, or like I talked about in the series or in the talk, Grace and Truth. And so being able to hopefully help people understand that wasn't just Jesus, something that Jesus led with. It was something he modeled. It was a thing he wanted us to follow. And particularly in this conversation around LGBTQ, like there are people that would say, hey, Phil, we're truth people. We really want you to just take a stand, you know? And I would say we've tried to be very clear as a community that as a church, we hold to a traditional view of gender and sexuality. And we don't want our position to overshadow people. Like, we genuinely love people. We're going to lead with grace, just like Jesus did. And then there are, like, grace people that are like, hey, why can't we just kind of let this one go? You know, it's 2024. You know, like, can we just be good with this not being a thing anymore? And so I think when you take Jesus' approach, you generally have people on the fringes of both the grace side and the truth side that are going to get mad at you, just like they did with him. So we got to talk a little bit about that, talk about the woman at the well, Samaritan woman that Jesus interacted with, and like this unbelievable snapshot that she is the first one that Jesus reveals his identity directly to. So this like woman that was a half-breed that Jewish people wouldn't have even talked to, Jesus is there at a time of the day when she like is there because she knew she would have been socially ostracized if she went another time. And she's like, well, the Messiah will clear all this up. And he's basically like, yeah, I just did. Like, that's me. And I think it's just a beautiful snapshot of the kind of people that maybe you would write off or the kind of people that maybe we would discard. We would say, well, God can't, not with that person, not in this category. And here is someone, not only was she a woman, not only was she a Samaritan woman, but a woman who'd been married and divorced multiple times, was now living with someone who wasn't her husband. And you're like, yeah, but is that a big deal? It was a huge deal. And, you know, something that's really interesting is the Jewish people had laws, and then they had kind of customs on top of that. And so I talked about how rabbis had their yoke, or basically like their approach to teaching.
Right.
And then there was this other thing called the Mishnah, which is actually, it means the fence. And it was, there were like the actual laws that you were supposed to follow given by God. And then there was this, all this stuff that people put around it. And I think that's so similar to the way we handle this conversation. And, you know, this idea of like, well, how do I love people who are LGBTQ? Like, how do you love people who aren't? Like, it's it's the same, you know. And I just think Jesus, he just regularly walked in to parties with people like, you're not supposed to be here. You're not supposed to talk to that person. You're not like, and he just over and over and over again had this model of leading with grace and leaning on truth at the same time in a way that wasn't judgmental. And so even at the end of this, right, she goes off to tell everybody. We see another time where people are ready to stone a woman caught in adultery. Jesus gets down on the ground and, you know, starts writing something on the ground. There's lots of description, lots of discussion about what he's writing, and everybody leaves. And hey, where'd everybody go? No, everybody left. Okay, well, go and sin no more. And Jesus, like, he led with grace and he leaned on truth. Led with grace, leaned on truth. And I think it's a pattern that I hope the Lord challenges all of us, myself included, with.
Yeah. There's a pattern that I've noticed throughout this series and in the podcast of repeated apologies. And we kind of started that out. We started off your message with that. And I know, because I know you and I know how precious those 30 minutes are, you don't waste a word.
Right.
And so why do we continue to apologize? And why are we doing that in multiple spaces?
I mean, I think that, there's just a lot that the church has to answer for, right? And not just like, not Menlo specific, but just the church in the West. And when somebody walks into this conversation, I know that a Christian has said something silly around them. I know it. I just know it. I know that, unfortunately, probably somebody with a microphone has said something silly. And so, like, we can hold to a traditional sexual ethic and do everything we can to be as loving and kind as possible. But, like, we all walk in with a resume of a place we've been before, of conversations we've had before. And if I don't acknowledge that, it just feels, I think, kind of tone deaf. And people are going, hey, you know, the last time that I heard about this, someone used a slur. You know, the last time I heard about this, my parents kicked me out. The last time that I heard about this, I was told I could never be loved by God. You know, and so I just think kind of every time we get a chance to just reset the conversation and say, man, you are not unlovable. You are so loved by God. And the same grace that I need is the same grace that you need. The foot of the cross is even for all of us. And I think as many times as we can say that, the better. Because it is, it is so pervasive. And we talked about the sort of cultural conversation at the end of the talk. There's culture either celebrates or condemns. Those are the only two categories we understand in broader culture. And Jesus was so amazing at compassionate clarity. Like, he was so good at it. And I think our culture needs compassionate clarity. And I think you have to apologize first, even for things you didn't do, if it's a category that you can relate to. There's a book called Still Time to Care. And in it, I don't remember his first name. The last name is Johnson. He talks about sort of the damaging quick fix kind of gay therapy stuff that got done in the church world for so long. And he tries to advocate for sort of a different approach, some of what we articulated this weekend.
Wow. I was listening to a message over the weekend of a friend that works at another church, and I think he brought up a statistic that said people in general will view Jesus very favorably, like the character of Jesus, like high 80% of Americans will. Right. And then about the same percentage of view unfavorably as Congress is Christians, about low 10 to 13% or so. It's like that's how favorable people see us because of the things that you just mentioned.
Right.
And so how can we, as we're stepping into conversations like this, how can we lead with both compassion and clarity? We got a text-in question that was kind of similar to this, saying, I kind of like that space of strategic ambiguity that you hinted at the beginning, because I could just love people, and it was easy, and so I didn't have to say anything or confront anyone. And so how can you continue to encourage us to lean into these conversations, maybe with this aside, maybe just hard conversations in general?
Yeah.
So good. So I am going to teach a series in a couple months called Smear Campaign that will hopefully help us navigate some of what we're talking about even right now, just about like, how do I engage in difficult conversations with thoughtfulness where my brain doesn't turn off and I don't turn off the brains of other people? And in that series, we're going to have a guest speaker and it come in named Ashley Island, amazing lady who's actually releasing a book about like how do we talk about controversial topics. Wow. And part of the thesis of her book, which is not released yet. I know that's like a flex that I just did. It's coming out next month.
I've already read it. It's fine. Yeah, I got a pre-release, whatever.
Anyway, part of the thesis of her book, and that she'll talk to when she's here, is that actually, like, I think part of what we see and experience in the power of the gospel is when we show up in disagreements with other people, and it doesn't mean that we agree at the end of it. It's that we understand how to maintain relationship in the midst of disagreement. Mm-hmm. That, like, the gospel can reconcile us even if we're not exactly one for one on every subject. And so I'm looking forward to that conversation. So some of it is like a wait and see. But I also think at a high level, to answer the question directly, I would say your volume and dialogue about controversial subjects should be louder and more pronounced with people you have a greater relationship with. Huh. And so first of all, I talked about this weekend, if we're talking about non-Christians, don't ask them to live like they're Christians, because I know this is going to be controversial. They're not. Like, they didn't sign up for the club, you know? So I think what the Bible says is for Christians, we're supposed to hold them accountable. For non-Christians, we're supposed to love them and let God bring conviction. And basically, we do the opposite thing. And so we try to judge the brains out of non-Christians, and we go, why aren't you Christian? And then with Christians, we go, thou shalt not judge. And so I tried to talk about that a little bit this weekend. Actually, it should be reversed. But it's not just like, oh, I know this person's a Christian, and I talked to them 17 years ago, and here they have a thing on their Instagram that seems controversial and I disagree with, so I'm going to blow them up online. No, you don't know that person. You don't know that person. Yeah. The conversation really, I think, should be most pronounced with people that we're in deep relationship with. And there are times, like I had a buddy who's in ministry, who's very prominent in ministry, and during kind of all the like George Floyd controversy and, you know, a lot of the uprising that was taking place and protests that were taking place after his murder, there was a post that a friend of mine, very pronounced leader in the country, he posted, and it was very like political, mm-hmm. very hurtful. And I didn't like blast him. I hadn't talked to him in years. I didn't like blast him on his thread, but I sent like a long note to him and just said, "Hey man, we're on the same team. We're trying to do the same thing. There is a way to have this conversation that is thoughtful and kind and doesn't surrender influence unnecessarily. And then there's what you did. And I love you enough to tell you that."
Oh.
And so I just think, you know, so much of it is like, Lord, what would you have me to say? And how would you have me to say it? And he doesn't live in my city. Otherwise, I would have just gone and seen him. Because I think that's the other lesson is if you have to have a clarifying conversation, something difficult, whether it's about this conversation or any of them, I would say social media is a terrible place to have it. Text message is the next worst place to have it. The best place to have it is face-to-face. And listen, hear people's story. Genuinely extend care. You can share what you think and feel. That's great. But I think understand, like, the more you have relationship, the more that relationship provides an avenue. It's like you're building a bridge, right? Like that bridge gets stronger and can withstand weight the more that relationship has had time, investment, and strength. I told a story of my best friend in high school who came out to me, and I could make a little bit of a joke with him, and we were good because he was my really, really good friend, right? We were friends years later. And that, like, we got to walk in this kind of amazing journey of friendship together. And I mean, he knew how I thought about it and all that stuff, but he also knew our relationship wasn't going anywhere. And I didn't say this weekend on purpose, but today, like, he would say over the course of years, he still has attraction for men, but God developed in him a specific attraction for a woman who he is married to, and they have kids. And I'm like, I don't know how to respond to this. Like, because in our culture, you're like, oh my gosh, that's so repressive. You know, like, how is he thinking and feeling? And I'm like, man, I tried to be a loving, kind friend that was willing to have clear conversations whenever he had them, but I wasn't the Holy Spirit in his life either.
I think we're also pulling at a thread of just the bipolar culture in which we exist.
Totally.
This conversation aside, with every conversation that's happening. And so how can we, as culture carriers of something that is different...
Let's go, Mark. That's a great line.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Let's, you can have it. Let's spit that bar.
How can we be leaders in that? And what does that look like with... You know, how do we show up to places? I mean, we're kind of all saying the same thing, which is like, be good people to your friends and be good and like carry yourself in a way that Jesus would like.
Right.
But in a world that is actively pulling us and saying not to do that, if you don't agree with me, you're on the other team, even if you're not. But just because you don't agree with me, that means you're now in this bucket.
For me or against me. You're celebrating or you're condemning. That's a great question. And I think, you know, one of the ways we talk about it kind of behind the scenes at Menlo is part of what it looks like to create followers of Jesus at Menlo that we think God's called us to help shape people into is thoughtful witnesses, right? Because we have kind of two extremes in culture. We have secret agents for God, which I think we are all feeling the pressure to be in our culture. You know, like, I hope my neighbor doesn't know I'm a Christian. I hope my coworker doesn't know that I'm a Christian. Because they have all these assumptions they're going to make about me. And, you know, you've maybe heard me say before, our faith is designed to be, it's always designed to be personal, but it's never designed to be private. We're not supposed to be secret agents for God. But at the same time, we maybe have in our head the other extreme, which is like bullhorn guy standing on a street corner, shouting at people, like, and you're like, I don't think, like, if that's what it means to be a Christian, I don't know if I want to be one either. And so I think trying to figure out what does it look like to be a thoughtful witness? It's in 1 Peter when it says that we should always be prepared to give a defense for the hope that is in us. And I think as we walk closer to Jesus every day, as we abide in Jesus all the time, we stay stuck to him, connected with him, our marriage is going to look different, our life is going to look different, and hopefully there are going to be people in our lives that they don't see us as perfect people, but they go, man, this thing at work that's destroying all of us doesn't seem to be destroying you. How are you doing that? Hey, everybody's marriage is falling apart. Your marriage isn't falling apart. what, why? Hey, and everything's not perfect, but you seem to carry like a level of confidence. You seem to carry a level of peace through your day. Mm-hmm. And you get like these little teeny tiny conversations that show up. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we talk about the knots. You hear people in your life that say, man, I'm just not ready for this. I'm not doing well. And you can kind of go, man, can we talk about like hope? It just seems like you need some hope. I think there are these little avenues where we get to kind of walk across that bridge and say, can I tell you? And we always lead with grace, right? This is what I found to be true in God. This is who I found God to be for me. This is what he's done in my life. Mm-hmm. And it's what he wants to do in yours. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can sort of be on the lookout for that, there are more of those opportunities that God is orchestrating in our lives than we see. And so I'm hopeful that series like this one give people handles about how to have a conversation in a thoughtful way. But I think most of the time it's just, hey, God opened that door to the conversation. Mm-hmm. Did you say, this is the easiest write-off, right? Oh my goodness, you seem so cool under pressure. That's amazing. How do you do it? This is what we do as Christians. We go, oh, it's no big deal. That's what we do. We kind of give some little humble nod, like it's fine, no big deal. And coming up with the answer that is, oh man, thank you so much. That's so kind of you. Honestly, this hasn't always been the case and I'm not perfect at it, but there's something a lot deeper in my life than the work that's around me. You know, let's grab coffee sometime. I'd love to tell you about it. The humble nod where I get to write it off is an easy thing. It's an easy excuse. Mm. And the other one carries risk. Mm. But I think what it means to be a thoughtful witness is always being ready to give a hope, to give a defense for the hope that's in you.
Oh, that's good. I feel like you were preaching right at me as someone who's going from ministry.
Here's what I
we set up this whole time just to say
here
that.
We go. Yeah. No, here, I did think about this question because you asked the question and I almost was like, Jess, I don't know. How are you thinking about it? And then I thought, that's not nice. You shouldn't do that. Like, you shouldn't put her on the spot. But I am kind of like excited because you're a warm personality. You really genuinely do care about people. Yeah. And I think that's going to stand out in an environment with a bunch of new faces.
Yeah.
And people are going to go, Jess, you are so kind all the time. Like, you're so fun to have around here. And you're going to get the choice.
Oh, stop.
You're going to get the choice to say, do I just humbly dismiss this?
Yeah.
Or do I tell them that, like, man, because here's what it is. As a follower of Jesus, I have a superpower. Like, that's the truth of it, mm-hmm. right? The spirit of the living God that created the world and breathed life into it lives inside of me. Mm-hmm. So when somebody across the desk in that meeting is like, how are you doing this? And I go, oh, it's no big deal. I'm saying like, oh, the Holy Spirit of God continuing to live inside of me, empowered by the Son of God coming to live and die on my behalf and then be resurrected so that I can experience eternity with him. It's no big deal. That's what I'm saying. But it's a big deal. And so how to do that in a way that's not weird, how to do that in a way that builds relationship. I think it's going to be great.
I'm going to write that, what you just said down really quick.
Just imagining Jess typing that out and sending it and three dots coming up and then disappearing.
Dot, 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 gone. That's the worst, by the way. That is the worst.
Leaders want,
That's fun. Well, Phil, if you had some more time, what else would you include in this message? I know we're also kind of getting to the end of our series
I know.
Are you relieved or are you...
Oh, man. Great question. It's been so good. You can't do series like this all the time.
Yeah.
But I just think, like, this is the conversation our culture is having, you know? And so the idea, so much of what you do when you're a preacher is you go, how do you help people? How do you preach something that's so relevant and compelling in people's lives? That they'll talk about it Monday, that it makes a difference in their life on Tuesday. And this series, you're like, I'm having conversations with people in our church every day. Mm. I'm having conversations with strangers who got these talks shared with them from somebody that goes to our church. And I'm like picking my kids up at school and they're saying, hey, not even a Christian, thanks for talking about this. Been listening to your talks. And I'm like, what? I don't know what to do with my face right now. Like, awesome. So glad.
Mm-hmm. That's where you go, thank you. It's the Jesus inside of me.
That's good. That's good. Man, Jess can't leave. This is too helpful. And I think there's a part of me that, like, I just love that. And I think also there is a part of navigating tension is you have to relieve tension at times too, right? So we'll do a week of baptisms and we'll do Mother's Day. And I was with a panel of ladies that are going to help us with Mother's Day. It's going to be amazing. And then we're going to jump into this kind of smear campaign series and that will have some of the same effect. And then we'll do a longer series in the summer. So I love it. It's been great. I think all of us are ready to catch our breath a little bit, myself included. My email needs a minute for sure. But it has been so good. Menlo Church, you've been amazing. Like, just incredible. So many people that just like love their kids, love their neighbors, love their coworkers, and they're trying to figure out, like, I want to believe this and I want to love this person at the same time. And culture says to me, I have to pick one. And you're telling me I don't have to, but how do I do that?
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, praise God. Like, that's the right question. So it's been awesome. Really, really good. Love it.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Phil, I'm excited that we've been able to include our community in this conversation as well. And whether that's people that are members of this church and have been here forever, whether this is a message that you got shared with and you have questions, we're opening this opportunity up for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
So thanks to all that have messaged us on Instagram or sent your questions in to 650-600-0402.
And that phone number is not going away.
No, that's not just his personal phone number.
Yeah.
Should we give out?
You can send messages to me though, if you'd like. Mark will pass it along. I'll only say that in, you know, there are other series that will come up, and there's other questions that you will have, and that number will always be available.
Exactly. Yep. And so we had a few from this week. We've already answered a few in this conversation.
Great.
So here's one, and I think it's a little bit of a callback to our guest speaker Mark Clark from last week as well. He had Tourette's, and so talked a little bit about that in his message, and also kind of used some language around like Tourette's being kind of developed through trauma and abuse, and requesting healing from God for those Tourette's. And so the question that we got sent in was around something similar. It was about a brain being neurodivergent, and I don't know if that was, you know, born from that way or born from abuse or whatever else, but how I think the question centers around are these things that that we have, whether that's inherited or not, are these characteristics, I'll use your language, Phil, are they bugs or are they features?
Sure. Such a good question.
Yeah.
Well, and I think especially in our moment, I would say we overuse therapeutic terms, in my opinion. We can pretty quickly... even for like very little children in very normal lives, be like, oh my goodness, this is trauma that you've just experienced. Now, in the most technical sense, it may be like, sometimes I'll describe it like lowercase t trauma, but we don't articulate it that way. So I think we can kind of overly therapeutize culture. And I think at the same time, within sort of critical theory and intersectionality, in the kind of oppressor framework, we can... weirdly identify, I think, in like a strange way, everything becomes a superpower, right? So it's like, hey, big challenge around this. Actually, I did, I have severe dyslexia, and I did sign language as my foreign language in high school. And it was a very controversial thing at the time because people were getting a new type of cochlear implant. And so people that had been deaf for years and years and years could all of a sudden hear. And there were people inside of the deaf community that were like, this isn't a disability. This is an ability. We shouldn't. And you were just kind of like, yeah, you can't hear though. Like, you can just say you don't want it, but I don't think you should judge someone else who says, I want to go have the ability to hear. Right. Mm. So now kind of the dynamic where it can be like, oh, you're an ableist. Like, my physical stature is different than your physical stature. And so you're an ableist. So I think there's, I want to acknowledge there are like layers to this conversation that can feel very tricky. I've probably already triggered someone in the way that I've described that. I will ask for your grace in it. I also think that there are things when we talk about neurotypical versus neurodivergent, where I do think typical is an interesting term, right? There are people that like learning for them was much easier in the way that we learn typically in a classroom.
Sure.
We're kind of built around that. For me, I have a learning disability, a reading disability, and severe dyslexia. And when I was little, I had a debilitating stutter. And I prayed for all those things to go away. I prayed for all that to go away. But I also think even though it came with limitations in the classroom, it also came with things that I couldn't appreciate at the time. But I developed coping strategies that gave me a drive that other people didn't have. It also helped me that because it took a little longer for me to learn things, usually once I've learned them, I don't forget them. And so those are sort of gifts, right?
Yeah. That's a superpower for sure for me.
I think asking the question, okay, God, what of this is this may be the right question. What of this, God, is a part of your imago Dei in my life? And what of this is as a result of the fact that I'm fallen, broken, and in a sinful world? Like, I think that's the question. Because we're complex, and there's parts of both of those things that are in us. And I think the really hard answer is we don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we're going to get to heaven, and there's going to be parts of us that we thought, man, I wish I could have changed that. Mm-hmm. And God's going to be like, no, like, that was this beautiful thing that I put inside of you that made you empathetic towards other people, mm-hmm. that allowed you to show up in this unique way, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there are going to be other things that it's like, yeah, that's a result of a really broken, sinful world. I'm so sorry. And I think no matter which it is, what we know in Romans 8:28 is God's going to use all of it for our good and his glory. Yeah. And I say that as somebody that grew up in a home with lots of violence. And I know that God didn't, like, in God's perfect design, I don't grow up getting hit as a child. But I also know that in God's design, he's used all of that. And now, like, I've been able to walk into pretty messy situations in my life. And when other people are sort of freaking out, I'm able to probably walk in with a different level because of what God's done in me for decades, right? Mm-hmm. So I think... I don't know the specific thing that this person is talking about, but I would say it's never wrong if you're saying, God, I want you to heal me of this. Like, I don't fault Mark for praying, God, would you heal me of my Tourette's? Mm-hmm. And if somebody else said, hey, I have something that's true of me and I don't actually want God to heal it. I'm like, it's happening in me. I don't think it, you know, when we talk about what's the result of sin, you could go, well, these diseases are the result of sin. But the result of sin and you sinning is different. So I grew up with an abusive relationship to my dad. That was sinful. It was a result of sin in the world. But I wasn't sinning. Like, that difference, right? Mm-hmm. If you have some physical disability in your life, God, actually, in a perfect world, none of us would have any physical disabilities. Like, we would all be perfectly created, everything's good, no sin. That doesn't mean that disability is a result of your sin. As a matter of fact, there's a time in Jesus' ministry where he's interacting with someone. I don't remember the exact physical limitations of the person. It might have just been that they were lame. And the disciples asked Jesus, was it this person who sinned? Or was it their? Was it the generation before? Yeah. Because that was the teaching within sort of the Jewish slipstream of the time, and Jesus is like, "Whoa, no! This wasn't about them. Actually, this wasn't about them." And here's his point. Jesus says, "This is so that the glory of God could be revealed." Mm-hmm. And so I just think it's important to don't put weight, burden, or shame on yourself for something that you can't change and didn't have anything to do with. Mm-hmm. God can still do something through it. God may heal it. The Apostle Paul talks about a thorn in his flesh. We don't know what it is. There's lots of different theories about it. But he asks God multiple times, would you take this away? And I get the sense that Paul was like really firmly asking, and God didn't. Mm-hmm. I think that whether we like it or not, most people of faith who are LGBTQ, they have asked God to remove it from their life. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't done it. And I wonder sometimes if Jesus would say to us, it's there so that the glory of God could be revealed through their life in a way that's unique, different, and special. And I wonder what would happen if we were the church that could believe it.
Dang. I saw that question and I was like, ooh, I'm ready for this answer. I have a bunch of friends who have been diagnosed with ADHD in the last 5 years or so. Yeah. And just everything you said was so good. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that affirmation is like you are, because of how you are, how you are wired, or how you've responded to things in your life, that doesn't make you less than mm-hmm. or less of the person that you are.
Right, right. And just because sin has impacted you mm-hmm. at a cosmic level in your life or reality, doesn't make that thing about you sinful, right? Like that's a different reality.
It is a different reality. That's good. We have one question from me, actually.
Yes. Perfect. Yeah. I'm here for it. So I'd love to go bike riding with you. Is that the question?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
And then we'll stop for Eggs Benedict. And so something good. With Meyer Lemon, something, because that's what Jess's favorite sauce.
So good.
So last week we were chatting with Mark Clark, pastor and author, who came in and guest spoke with us. And it was just a mention in the conversation that we had on the podcast, which was about basically a view that he could not go to certain places with certain people. I think it was, I couldn't go to a coffee shop one-on-one with a woman.
Oh, this was the conversation about somebody that he was discipling at his church plant in Canada. Mm-hmm. That person he that later found out from someone else had transitioned.
Okay.
And so they were biologically female and had transitioned and were trans male. And he didn't know. And he was like, oh, you know, he was kind of, it's like, you're right. It was like a throwaway line. He's like, oh, I didn't know. If I had known, like, I can't be in Starbucks with you one-on-one, you know.
Yeah.
So I think to Mark's credit, I bet he would have a more robust answer than I think, set the stage for what that often refers to, give my thoughts on it, and then you can have whatever thoughts you want about it.
Yeah.
That if you've ever heard the term the Billy Graham rule, that's what we're talking about.
Yep.
And so Billy Graham, who was a famous evangelist, had this rule that basically he was never alone with a woman that was not his wife. Now, keep in mind, this was like 1950. And I think one of the things that like helps us to understand just the nature of culture at the time, I've heard it said that if you want to follow the Billy Graham rule, you should follow all of his rules. And another one of his rules is that Billy Graham made a rule that he would never get paid more than $15,000 a year. And wow. So
as you chuckle.
Yeah. And so I just think
have you heard of inflation?
Right. And so I think I understand the spirit of it. Yeah. And I think there all of us have boundaries. You know, if you're ever in my office here at church, like my office is right along, I don't know what university. And all of my windows are open. They're not like open to the outside, but there's nothing covering them. You can just see right inside.
Yep.
That's a decision for me, you know. I don't typically like meet or travel alone with just like another woman that isn't my wife. That doesn't mean that I would never have a one-on-one meeting. I have them plenty of times for our staff, for people in our church. But I would say a lot of times for me, the same patterns that I would have for another guy, I have for a woman, which is, what does it look like for me to be above reproach? What does it mean for me to live with transparency in my life? So anyone on our team just about can look at my calendar and see who I'm meeting with at any given time. And I think that that gets metered out, I think, by different people in different ways.
Sure.
I think sometimes it's informed by your specific marriage. Sometimes it's informed by your specific past and the proclivities you know you have. But I think, we're an egalitarian church. We believe that God has gifted men and women, and we have men and women who serve at every level at Menlo equally, including our session, our elder board, what I like to call my nine bosses, right? We have men and women on that team. And so I
led by a woman,
led by my real boss. It's Jennifer Blatnick. And
she's the best boss.
She's
ever.
Incredible. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it probably shows up in different contexts differently. And Mark's egalitarian as well, but, I think that probably if we asked him, it was more of a throwaway. This is just a traditionalist view and I'm being silly.
Yes.
But I think that's typically where it's coming from when you hear someone talk about
it. Yeah, good. I'm glad we could bring clarity to that. Because I think it's important, because that has been, again, one of those things where people can get caught up on statements like that and then fully write off the person, because if you're not on my team,
totally,
you're not with me. And to me, what I pulled out of that was just the care and respect for your spouse. If you are single, care and respect for yourself. You can make up your own rules. We're hoping that people here, as they are developing a life with Jesus, can figure out what appropriate boundaries looks like for them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we live in a time where any boundary can feel like oppression. We talked about that in week two.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would just say we should all have some boundaries in our life. You know, legalism is when other people set them for you. Rule of life is when God and you set them for you. And so if you've never heard of the term rule of life, there's a great new book out by John Mark Comer called Practicing the Way. Kind of is the name of this ministry that he leads as well. And in it, you kind of identify, what does it look like for me to develop a rule of life? What are the boundaries that I'm setting for myself with God around relationships, around finances, around generosity, around my time, around leisure? And it doesn't become a straitjacket. Hopefully it becomes something that just frees us to say, I want to be a consistent person. I want to integrate my faith into the choices that I make every day.
Yeah. I think too, like that, the Billy Graham rule can be triggering for some people, because from my personal experience, that was like my high school was like, you cannot be alone because this rule. That was put on you. Well, it's like, well, how about we teach people to have boundaries, and we teach people to be able to make decisions for themselves. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, even think that there probably are people that have that rule for themselves because that is something that they have, you know, fell into in the past, or that is something that they and their wife or husband have agreed upon. Like, this would make me feel more comfortable, and that's fine. But when it's put on you as this is something you have to do to be a good person, and this is something you have to do to be better for your future husband or your future wife, that's when it's just like, I know how to handle myself, and I hope that, I hope that they also know how to handle themselves. But I think it goes back to that rule being put upon a lot of us.
Well, I think two things that are really important to highlight. One is, when that happens in a ministry context, it's like been statistically shown that women will get passed over for promotions more often, will have fewer opportunities, because it's like, oh, I'm going to go have lunch, but I don't have lunch with women. So now the people that I have lunch with and connect with interpersonally, that's how social networks take place, right? And then I think the other thing, that there's like a balance, right? One is, this is the way it usually got done in purity culture. Hey, ladies, dress more modestly for your brothers, if you really love your brothers. And you're like, on one hand, you're like, hey, guys, you're actually responsible for your thought life. They're not responsible. But I think there's an extreme of that, right? The Bible actually does talk about modesty. It's text, by the way, that applies to men and women. It's not just one. And we're responsible for our own thought life. And so we shouldn't leverage guilt and shame to have power over people. We should say, hey, we all walk with modesty. The reason we walk with modesty is out of reverence for God. It has nothing to do with someone else. And we all are responsible for our thoughts. We are all responsible for the way that I interact and see the world. Because even if everybody at our church is dressed so modestly, I'm going to drive down the street, I'm going to scroll on social media, I'm going to turn on the TV, and I'm going to be inundated with a culture that has a different set of values.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we're all being discipled by something.
That's exactly right.
Well, this is the last time I get to ask this question.
I'm ready.
Jess, what do we have going on coming up?
I don't even know. I haven't even paid attention. No, well, I'm just kidding.
The great thing about Jess is, even though she's leaving literally today or tomorrow, she's probably still knows all the details for everything to come for the next couple of weeks. So we have a couple of events. One's hosted by us, and that same event's hosting somewhere else. Where can people find that? And Where can we hear more information about that and sign up?
Menlo.church/events. I believe it's also menlo.church/wonderfullymade, our series with all those resources. There's two separate ones. One is with Dan Kimball. There's three different ones, because Preston Springle is doing two, one for staff. So I get them all confused. So if you have it pulled up, maybe you just
actually, when you're listening to this,
we will be celebrating Dan Kimball.
Talk Theology is already done. May 7th, Preston Sprinkle will be here at Menlo Church at our Menlo Park campus, 6:30 to 9, talking about faith, sexuality, and gender, kind of a broader general event. You definitely want to register for that event if you want to be there for it. And then the next day, May 8th, at Westgate Church, from 6:30 to 9, is an event specifically for students, for teenagers. And so hopefully those two events are helpful. We do also have Preston spending some time with the staff of all the churches that are involved in the series, but you all can't sign up for that. You got other stuff you want to do probably anyway. But those are a couple events. And there are also a couple specific interest groups that I called out in the message. If you are the parent of an LGBTQ child and you want to connect with other parents, facing some of the same challenges and learning to love your child in the midst of this. Mm-hmm. There is a LGBTQ parent group interest form at menlo.church/wonderfullymade. And if you are yourself LGBTQ and you're like, I just kind of want to explore faith and I'd love to do that in a place that's going to be thoughtful and sensitive around this conversation, mm-hmm. there's a space for you to be able to indicate interest as well. All that stuff, the events, the resources, signing up for interest groups, all of that, past messages, all at menlo.church/wonderfullymade.
Well, thanks so much. Jess, can I pray for you?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. God, thanks so much. Thank you so much for this time. Thank you for this space where we can chat more about what you are calling us to be, think, feel, do, God, and convicting us in our own ways, God. And one of the things that I am most excited for is to see and celebrate Jess and the continued success that she's going to have. And she's just made such a huge impact on this church over the last couple of years, God. She is one of the pioneers of online ministry, God. She helped not only launch this thing from scratch, but care and love all of the people along the way, help make strategic decisions on what we're doing and why we're doing them. And I know that the development and the growth that I've seen in her will not stop, God, mm-hmm. because she loves you so dearly and she loves people so dearly, God. So I just pray that you would continue to be with her in her next steps. And we know that we will never forget her here and that the impact of her ministry here over 11 and a half years, God, was not wasted, but bears so much fruit, God. Mm-hmm. So we pray that she'd be reminded of that and reminded of how much not only I and our staff, but everyone here loves her. So we pray this in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Have a great week, everybody.
Bye.